Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the grill room is definitely on our tab. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
The West Coast swing has begun on the PGA Tour, starting in Palm Desert. And finally, an old guy records a win. That's assuming that 38 years old can be defined as an old guy, certainly not in my book, on the PGA Tour these days. Welcome to the Grill Room. I'm Bob Bubka, here with Alex Maselli. And Alex, we really can't call Jason Duffner an old guy.
Well, you and I can't, but
I can't for sure. You're borderline.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the bottom line is when you look at everybody that's winning out there, if you look at all the names that we talk about on a weekly basis, they're all guys considerably younger than Jason Duffner generally. So, yeah, I mean, in this particular case, he's an old guy, but I mean, he's in pretty good shape. Doesn't look 38, and you know, it's been a struggle for Jason Duffner for many reasons. I mean, this is his first time winning, Bob, since the 2013 PGA Championship. You got to figure that it's a pretty big win, and it's something that he can build on. Even though he's been playing well at the beginning of the 16 season, which would have been last year, even at Sony last week. He started to show real signs of a chance to do something, and just happened to get it done in the desert.
You know what's amazing about this sport that we cover, Alex? You know, he wins the 2013 PGA Championship, a major on his mantle, and then, as you pointed out, he doesn't win until this past week, but there were extenuating circumstances, obviously. Well documented that, you know, it went through a divorce and distractions, you know, off the golf course. And, you know, I look at it and I say, you know, these fields are so talented, and there's so many talented guys that, you know, if you're not firing on all cylinders, if you got to, for a half a hole, think about what's going on in your personal life, you're not going to get the job done.
Well, I think his life was very public after the 13th PGA Championship. People remember the term Duffnering, those kind of things. Jason Duffner had he was always seen to be a little odd, but had an interesting sense of humor. He became more of a public darling, especially with social media and with his wife. And then things started come crashing down, and Jason Duffner didn't know how to deal with it, certainly didn't deal with it very well. And to be quite honest with you, I'm not sure he's completely 100% dealt with it. He's still unwilling to talk to certain media. I actually approached him last Sunday after his round at Sony, where he finished in the top 10, because I thought he had a pretty good week, and he was unwilling to talk. And, you know, he's still bitter about the divorce, still bitter about how the media covered his divorce. So he still has some issues, but you know, it takes a while to come back from certain things, either mentally nor physically. And in this case, it's taken Duffner a while. But and I'm not going to say he's completely back, but what I will say is he certainly has shown some signs of being back with the win this week.
You know, you brought up something very interesting. I mean, a situation we should address on the Grill Room, because I don't think that the general public, the golf fans, realize that a lot of times players, for whatever reason, they get upset with one portion of the media or another portion of the media, and sometimes, you know, somebody in the media writes something or says something, and then it affects, you know, a wider scope of the media, and not for anything they said, but what somebody else said. And I think that problem is becoming more prevalent now in this world that a lot of times when I look at it, it's like a whole different world than I was familiar with. And I don't know if social media is the best thing for professional golfers.
I think the tour would push you towards social media. And, you know, because it expands and it expands the sport, it expands the tour, exposes players. But, you know, it's like anything else. When you say something to the public without a filter, and believe it or not, the journalists are filters. And when you say something to the public without a filter, you can get in trouble very quickly. And most people would say, if they were doing an analysis of social media, it hurts you more than it's ever going to help you. And I think that was the case with Jason Duffner.
I'm just curious. I heard an interview, Lisa Cromwell, who I think does a great job for Golf Channel, was talking to past President Bill Clinton, and he made the statement that, you know, he was talking about guys that are on the PGA Tour, talking about how young they are and how much better they are and how much more they work out and, you know, all of those things. And then he, you know, just said matter-of-factly and, you know, surprisingly enough, some of the guys on the PGA Tour are very intelligent. And that struck me as an odd statement to make. I don't know if you heard it. Now that you have heard it, your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, I think if you parse the statement out, what you're basically saying is that golf, like any other sport, and most of the people aren't that intelligent. I mean, I think that's what he's intimating. But in this particular case, golf has some intelligent people. Well, I think golf in general has a lot of intelligent people. The what's required to play this game at this level is pretty much intelligence. There are some exceptions where people don't have, maybe if there was an IQ test taken, wouldn't have the highest IQ possible. But I don't think if you took a survey of the entire world, I would think that PGA Tour professionals are probably higher than the average on the intelligence scale. And, you know, I'm not sure why he would say that. I don't know what he was intimating, but what it seems to mean is he thinks that, you know, we're like a bunch of meatheads out here hitting a golf ball, which clearly cannot and is not the case.
Yeah, no, that's the impression I got. I mean, you know, having covered this great sport, they're the furthest thing from meatheads that you'll ever see. One more oddball question. And I don't even know, I can't legitimize why I'm asking it, but I'm going to do it anyway. Do you know the average IQ of, let's say, the population of the United States?
You know, I don't. And, I think part of the reason you don't is because that's not really the measure that they use anymore for intelligence. I mean, we've always heard that back in the day, but they use other things now, I think, for a more accurate measure. And so that might be why we don't. So the answer would be no.
I'm going to stay away from those modern-day tests. I hope they don't give me one without me knowing about it. Could be embarrassing. Certainly not embarrassing for Jason Duffner. Let's listen to what he had to say about his victory.
It's always a good week here in the Palm Desert area. The guys love coming here. We usually get great conditions to play, great weather, which we had this week. So we're always excited to come here and play. Usually low scores, so you can, you know, work on your scoring clubs and get comfortable shooting some low scores. So we're always excited to be here. 17, it's a tough hole. It's a little bit intimidating. Today the wind was, I think, in a tougher spot. It seemed to be going a little right to left with some help with a right pin. So you got to take on some gamble. I tried to hit it in the middle of the fairway or in the middle of the green and hold one up, and I kind of pulled it a little bit. Got a great break. Ball was sitting up. Kind of looked like something we might see at the Open Championship, where you're on some hard pan. There was one rock that was maybe questionable to be in the way, but you know, it's a shot that I've hit some, not in the hazard, but something similar. You kind of hit that low little spinning one with some check on it. You know, to be honest, I kind of thought it might have gone in. It hit the pin pretty hard right in the middle. So that was definitely a turning point for me. If that ball's in the water, I'm probably looking at four, at best, maybe five, and then probably not sitting here talking to you guys. So I'm glad that the luck has turned a little bit for me.
So the Duff gets it done, Alex, and in another desert, a long ways away, Ricky Fowler wins in Abu Dhabi and did it against a pretty good field.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you have the world number one and the world number two there, or rather number three there, I think that, there's no question that having Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth at the table makes it a little bigger win. And, you know, again, this is Fowler showing that he can play anywhere in the world. It's amazing. And 12 months ago, Ricky Fowler had one win. That was basically what we hung our hat on when talking about Ricky Fowler. And since then, he's had one big win, another big win in the U.S., and two big wins overseas. And it really begs the question, you know, how good will Ricky Fowler be now? Because I think he's gotten out of his own way. I think he's broken through whatever glass ceiling that he had. And it'll be interesting to see where he can go from there, from now.
You know, I can't help but think back, Alex, on the eve of the merchandise show, which we're going to be covering in detail next week. 2 years ago, walking by the Wynn Grip booth, and who was standing there? Obviously, the spokesperson, Butch Harmon, and said, "Butch, you got a minute?" And we sat down and we talked, and I said, "What's new and what's exciting?" He said, "Well, Ricky Fowler wanted to come into the stable," and it was interesting the way he said it, and I guess they do it all the time. You would know far better than me, but he said, "You know." So I called up the guys that I work with, and I said, "Ricky, join our group, okay?" And Butch said, every one of them said, "Oh yeah, yeah, no, please, Ricky's a good guy." So I said, "But what do you think of his talents? I mean, you know, he hadn't won the Players yet. He hadn't done. He hadn't finished the second. Finished in the top five in all four majors in 1 year." And he said, "Bob, I'm going to tell you, Ricky Fowler's an extremely talented golfer. Now you got to filter a little bit of that because you know he's going to come to go work under Butch Harmon. So he's certainly not going to tell me he has no talent whatsoever. But I think Butch Harmon deserves a lot of credit for molding a little more competitive Ricky Fowler than he was before he went to work with Butch.
Well, you know, Bob, I think if you look at Ricky Fowler's swing before he went to work with Butch and where it is now, you'd be kind of hard-pressed to see how different it is. And so I think you're right. I think a lot of what Ricky Fowler and Butch Harmon have worked on that have made the difference have been more of a mental approach than it's been a swing change.
No, you're right. You can't see a lot of differences. I'm sure there's some minor alterations he made. But anyway, certainly was a great win for Ricky Fowler, and he tells us how important it was to him.
This is a big one. You know, last year, obviously having a multiple win season, but to come back and, you know, work on getting back in the winner's circle after a successful season and keep moving forward. And this is a great start. Obviously, a great field that HSBC has helped put together here. The course is perfect shape. It was a lot of fun today. It was a bit stressful at times. You know, Thomas was playing well. It was fun to go kind of head-to-head with him and be in the same group. So we had a good time, and it's just nice to come out on top this week.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. He's Alex. I'm Bob. And you were just listening to Ricky Fowler. And Alex, I'm having a little difficulty now, you know, hearing Big Three, McIlroy, Spieth Day. Shouldn't it really be called the Big Four? I know the leading argument that it's not the Big Four is that Ricky Fowler hasn't won a major. But, you know, he's won the Players' Championship. And he's young. He's in that mold. I'm more comfortable with Big Four than I am with Big Three right now. Where do you stand?
Well, I wrote an article for Golf Week on Sunday. I got up. Ricky Fowler wins. Get on Twitter. And it's all full of, you know, Fab Four. Shouldn't be the Fab Four. Ricky wins. Big Three, no. Fab Four, yes. And, you know, we so easily jump on bandwagons in this sport. And I just don't agree that Ricky Fowler is good right now is Rory McIlroy or Jason Day or Jordan Spieth, even though he moved to number four in the world with the win. So I wrote that, and I think, you know, you have to, first of all, majors are important. Majors are not, majors are the measure, no matter what anybody else wants to say, majors are the measure of a person's career. You know, you can win 50 times on the PGA Tour. If you don't win a major, you just aren't. You're just not the person that someone that's won one major is. There's just no way around that. And if you doubt that, just think of Colin Montgomery. Because Colin Montgomery won a lot in his career and won numerous order of merits on the European Tour. But that's not like winning a major championship. It's just not. And, you know, we talked about if he should have been in the Hall of Fame, for goodness sakes. He's a guy that won so many times. Now, I think he should have been in the Hall of Fame, but the bottom line is you know, I take Bubba Watson with two major wins and eight wins on his career. Personally, Bubba Watson has had a more prestigious career in golf than Colin Montgomery. And, you know, when someone says to you, these are the times you have to get it done. These are what you're focusing on, these four times. And Ricky Fowler has already indicated 2 years ago how important it was to focus on the four majors. But if that's when you're supposed to get it done and you do get it done, then you clearly are in that upper echelon. And until you get it done in those situations, then you're just one of the numerous hundreds of players out there on the PGA Tour.
I need your help here, Alex. I'm up at the plate. I don't know whether you just threw me a fastball or a curveball when talking about Colin Montgomery. I think maybe you said he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, or I thought I heard you say he should be in the Hall of Fame, but the fact is he is in the Hall of Fame, isn't he?
Right. He is in the Hall of Fame. What I'm saying is, yes, he should be in the Hall of Fame, but his measure of his career, I mean, the career that you're looking for, if you're any professional golfer, is to win a major championship. When you take somebody like Bubba Watson with two green jackets and only eight wins on the PGA Tour, to me, his career is more prestigious. His career is more of a career that people would want versus that of Colin Montgomery.
Right, we're going to hear from Jordan Spieth in a minute, Alex, but I want to run this across the Alex Maselli radar screen. I felt that it was far more important for Rory McIlroy to finish ahead of Jordan Spieth than it was vice versa. And I'm saying that because I think Rory McIlroy is looking at this year as the year where he wants to get back to number one. He didn't win a major last year. Obviously, well documented. He only played in three of them. And he does finish higher than Jordan Spieth. I don't know if that's a one-off or that's going to be the norm this year with Spieth not playing as well as Rory McIlroy in the tournaments.
Well, I think, first of all, Rory McIlroy would like to beat everybody. And I'm not sure if he was he was a couple spots ahead of Jordan Spieth or not would make a difference to him. I think if you ask him at the end what makes a difference to him, it was that he couldn't get it done. He was tied for the lead on Sunday at one point, Sunday morning, when they were finishing the third round. And then it went backwards. And I think if you ask him what was frustrating was the fact that he didn't get it done. I mean, Ricky didn't light it up on Sunday. You know, certainly he played well, but he didn't light it up. Thomas Peters was pretty close to him by a shot. And I think Rory was a couple shots back. So I think that's the thing that Rory looks at. I mean, you know, I got two Americans flying all the way over from the United States here to Abu Dhabi to play an event that they're not familiar with, and I'm playing in the same event and a golf course I am familiar with, and I'm not traveling anywhere near as far, and I got one guy just a couple shots behind me and the other guy beat me. That's what I'd be thinking about, not about the fact that I wanted to beat Jordan Spieth coming in.
All right, thanks for your help on that. Now, let's help our listeners by allowing them to listen what Jordan Spieth had to say about his performance.
I didn't make anything. You know, I didn't give myself a lot of chances the first couple rounds, so I didn't get in a rhythm. And then when I did have chances, they just wouldn't go. You know, I just a little off on the read or the speed, one of the two. You know, sometimes that happens during a week. And we kind of grinded out 8 under on the weekend in what really could have been something special. But
it also could have been worse. So kept our head in it there. The back nine really finished four under on the last seven holes to carry some momentum going forward off of a week that, you know, I could have just bagged it in.
All right, Alex, let's move on to the Champions Tour. They were off to a great start. Duffy Waldorf comes out on top. Our good friend Tom Lehman misses by a shot. A pretty nice event, Mitsubishi Electric Championship, held every year in Hawaii.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say, Bob, that Duffy Waldorf was a journeyman on the PGA Tour. So once he turned 50, he's got an opportunity to make some hay. And clearly this is a big thing, winning out there for him. He's never had a great career on the PGA Tour. So to take advantage of being out on the Champions Tour, and, you know, I mean, you can really make some decent money at the end of your career out on that tour. So congratulations to Duffy Waldorf. By the way, the Grill Room is proud to be entertaining the active men and women in our military, as well as our veterans, as part of the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Shorts or no shorts? That is the question. We'll talk about it when we return. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfWeek.com. Heard on TuneIn Radio and on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Ricky Fowler agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere. Alex, right now I'd like to mention the Kapalua Villas Maui, the ultimate hideaway where privacy is as much a part of the experience as the world-class facilities. Three beaches, 11 restaurants, a great spa, championship golf, and world-class tennis. If a trip to Maui is in your plans, visit KapaluaVillasMaui.com or call them at 800-545-0018 to make your reservation today. Kapalua Villas Maui, the complete Hawaii experience.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Well, before the break, we mentioned it, shorts or no shorts. Seems now, Alex, the European Tour kind of becoming a trendsetter. They have decided that on the European Tour, they can let the guys play in shorts during practice and pro-am rounds in certain locations around the world. However, the PGA Tour seems adamant about the fact that they don't want their players wearing shorts. Give me the long and short of it, Alan.
Well, Bob, I think the tour is the ultimate no-fun league, actually. I mean, this is the same tour that disciplines caddies for having too colorful of shoes. So, you know, I don't understand that. I mean, let's be honest. In some venues that we've gone to, it's been warm enough that it seems to make a lot of sense for players to be able to play in shorts, especially during pro-am rounds. I mean, who cares about pro-am rounds? It's ridiculous. But that being said, you know, it's supposedly the players' tour, so I'm sure all the players got together and suggested that it wouldn't be a good idea.
Well, we'll have to keep an eye on that, and we'll see if any shorts sprout up on the PGA Tour. Now, an interesting gentleman by the name of Bryson DeChambeau, he calls himself a golf scientist. What does that mean, Alex?
Well, I mean, I think if you know anything about the history of DeChambeau, you would kind of understand. I mean, people kind of got very exposed to him, especially in Abu Dhabi after playing so well in the first round, having the lead. You know, Bryson DeChambeau is different than most any golfer. He's a very smart kid. He was getting his degree in physics at SMU until the program went on suspension and Bryson ended up leaving his senior year. But here you have the U.S. Amateur champion, the NCAA champion. There's not too many of those. But what he does is that he is, his clubs are, meaning his irons, are all set at the same length on the shafts. They all have the same lies. They just have different lofts. And they're geometrically, the lofts change each way so that they go through a pattern. His lies are a little different, and his shafts are all the same. They're basically a 6 or 7 iron shaft. So basically his swing is the same swing with every club. The weight of the head is also the same weight, so that he's always swinging exactly the same if it's a wedge or if it's a 4 iron. Now, that is a difficult thing to get used to. It certainly required a lot of work to try to figure out this whole process. And he's the one that started the idea going back to, I think it's Perfect Golf. He's the one that took this, went to his coaches back when he was a young kid, and sat down and worked through this whole idea of what he would do, how he would do it. They've had numerous sets of clubs made for him, especially when he was younger. At first, requiring a lot of work on the iron, on the heads themselves, but eventually got it to some point where he felt comfortable with it. Now, David Adell custom makes his clubs for him, and the price of what David charges him is, at the time, seemed a lot of money, but now with PXG out there, doesn't seem as much money. And Bryson DeChambeau has a completely different way of playing golf, and the golf scientist part is the way that he set his clubs up, and the proof in the pudding is the results that he's shown so far, which have been pretty good for a kid coming out of college that hasn't even finished college yet. He's actually hasn't even finished his amateur career yet. He's going to wait until after the U.S. The Masters, rather, to go ahead and turn professional.
All right, Alex mentioned a couple of things. One, PXG, we're going to talk about that in a little while. And number two, you know, I don't want our Grill Room listeners to get all excited. Well, you know, maybe this is an easier way to play this game. Let's hold judgment on that. It does work for Bryson and certainly works very well. All right, musical chairs on the PGA Tour. Alex Barkley's out, Northern Trust in, Northern Trust out at Riviera. Hyundai is out on Maui, but it's in at Northern Trust. What's going on in the world of sponsorship on the PGA Tour?
Well, you know, the banks generally, Bob, are having some issues. So Barclays was always going to be out at in Long Island or wherever the venue is, if it's in New Jersey or Long Island. But they're always going to be out as the first FedEx Cup playoff event. Northern Trust moving there makes a lot of sense. They never really loved being in Los Angeles. They're a Chicago bank. But they certainly have a lot of ties to the east, or to, in this case, the northeast. So that move made a lot of sense. Keeping Northern Trust in the fold was important for the PGA Tour. So that deal was done pretty early on. In fact, we broke that story with AP at the same time AP did last week. The Hyundai thing we knew about. Hyundai has always been a pretty big supporter of the PGA Tour, but you know, at the end of the day, the cost of running an event in Maui and what you get out of running that event, except for television exposure, is not very much if you're Hyundai. I mean, you have to physically ship the cars all the way from the mainland to Maui. They have to be used there, then you have to ship them back, basically. It's just not the best scenario for Hyundai. It's certainly not a lot of spectators. So you're not getting a lot out of your sponsorship on the ground as you are on television. Now, you take Hyundai. They're based in Los Angeles. So that means they have huge customers that they could bring in all the way to L.A. for the Northern Trust Open. It made a lot of sense for them to get involved in that event. But unlike Northern Trust, it could sign off on the thing because they're headquartered in Chicago. The real headquarters for Hyundai was in Korea. So the deal took a little more time to get done, so they couldn't announce it together. But eventually the people in Korea signed off on the deal, and it got announced, like, I think a day or two later after the Northern Trust deal. It all makes sense, really, and it's something where the PGA Tour has a better chance of keeping these sponsors in these positions for a longer time. So I think it makes perfect sense for them. What it does do, though, is it takes Maui and puts it up in a bit of a kerfuffle, I would say. They have to figure out who's going to be the next sponsor. The SBS deal with the Korean Broadcasting Company, We think that's still in play, but we really don't know. It's not like they give us a copy of the contracts and we can look at them. So we'll have to see what happens with Maui. I'm sure there'll be an event in Maui, a tournament of champions in 2017. Just the question is who's going to be the sponsor?
Well, the most important question that I need answers to, and I hope you can help me out. If not, I'm going to call the head of Hyundai and find out exactly what's going on. What about the media party? The media party of Maui was the best media party of the year. Are we going to have that at in L.A., or is that going to go by the board?
I think Northern Trust, the what is now the Northern Trust Open, which will be, I guess, the Hyundai Open, I think it's going to be a little different. I think because Hyundai has experienced Maui and experienced Hawaii and experienced how it was done there, I think they're going to probably insist on some changes at the Northern Trust Open. And so maybe, Bob, maybe you will see a media party that will rival that of the Northern Trust Open. There's certainly good places to go for a media party in Los Angeles, but it won't be as close as it is to the golf course in Maui.
Well, certainly my congratulations to the good people at Hyundai. They did put on the best media party. We only can hope that will continue. Speaking of hope, it springs eternal that the Olympics and golf are going to amount to a successful demonstration or competition, I guess, better word, coming up in just a few months. What about the Olympic golf course? Any word, late word, on whether it's ready or not, Alex, down in Rio?
Well, the course has been ready for a while, Bob. But to basically certify things ready to go, they need to have a test event of some type. And the test event isn't going to be to allow them to make changes to the golf course. The test event is more so they can understand the operations and the administration of an event on the golf course, which means they have to have somewhat of a little kind of demonstration event. But really, it's all going to be about what everything else that's going on. You know, well, how are we going to handle getting players from point A to point B, and how are we going to handle spectators? How are we going to handle, you know, all the things that are required to run a golf tournament? So that's the reason for the test event. Now, the date has been set for March 8th, which is going to be the week of Valspar. But the tour is having a difficult time getting players to go down to the test event. They don't need a lot of them, but they need some. And it's just not the best time in the world to approach players and ask them to go, even though they've approached Jimmy Walker and Kevin Kisner and Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth about making the trip down to Rio for just a couple days. They'll charter them down, charter them back up. So we'll see what happens. But the plan is now, as far as I know, is to go ahead and continue to do some kind of test event, a demonstration event, on the 8th of March.
Well, it would not surprise me, Grill Room listeners, if they have a charter going to Rio just for a couple of days. I would assume that Alex Maselli will be negotiating for a seat on that aircraft. We'll leave that. We'll find out later. Speaking of finding out things later, pretty good source has informed me, Alex, that Bob Parsons, you know, the PX Golf Club guy, paying 100 club pros to play his clubs. Good move on his part.
Well, I don't see why it wouldn't be. I mean, first of all, nothing would surprise me about Bob Parsons and how he's promoting PXG. You know, he's got a lot of money. The clubs are very expensive. And I think the way that you get these clubs in front of players, meaning not PGA Tour players, but normal everyday players, is by having your club pro play them. He can understand, or she can understand, the benefits of the clubs. They can tout those benefits to their membership. And I'm sure, you know, if you get a couple of members buying those clubs, it's certainly a windfall. I know that in certain cases with shoes or with clothing, that was a very high end. Again, the best way to get that in front of its membership is to get it in front of the pro and pro first. So I think that's certainly a good move. And, you know, 100 pros, pay them $20,000 each, $200,000, you know, that'd be like $2 million. Even that's not anything that Bob Parsons is concerned about. So, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
We have a mutual friend by the name Bob Joyce. He's been a club professional his entire life. I think he was born a club professional. He loves it so much. Rumor has it Bob Parsons is paying Bob Joyce not to play the clubs, but not to play the clubs. All right, 1 million square feet of exhibition space. That's what the PGA Merchandise Show takes up this week in Orlando. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfWeek.com. Heard on TuneIn Radio and on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. The 2015 Masters champion, the U.S. Open champion, and the FedEx Cup champion, Jordan Spieth, agrees.
If you love golf like I do, you'll thank your golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
The Holiday Inn Resort, Waikiki Beachcombers, you know, as the name suggests, it's not only right in the heart of Waikiki, but it's only 300 short steps to the famous Waikiki Beach. Truly a vacation retreat. Reflects the culture of Honolulu and the spirit of Aloha. 496 comfortable guest rooms, which I'm in one, and I can't tell you how nice it really is. You can see Diamond Head, Waikiki, and of course the ocean, and complimentary Wi-Fi. The Jimmy Buffett restaurant, which is now a farm-to-table restaurant, and farm-to-table to me is great. I mean, I don't think people understand how great it really is. So the Buffett restaurant is great. Everything about the beach home is great, so I would recommend it highly. Anyone coming to Honolulu, the Holiday Inn Resort, Waikiki Beachcomber, it is great. Feel the spirit of Aloha. 877-577-5756. Go online at the WaikikiBeachcomberResort.com. I mean, obviously, I'm staying there, so you think, oh, well, I'm staying there. But it's just a lot of fun, and I will tell you right now that next year, exactly where I'm staying again.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Some facts and figures about the PGA Merchandise Show. By the way, celebrating the 100th anniversary of the PGA of America this year. Down at the show, going to be over 1,000 exhibitors. You want to walk and see everything that's on display? Well, you better be ready to walk 10 miles of aisles to cover the show. More than 40,000 attendees. So it begs the question, Mr. Maselli, how important is the show and what kind of impact do you think it has on the golf business?
Well, I mean, I think the show still has some importance, Bob, not the importance it had back in the day. And the impact on golf business is not as much as it used to be as well. I think that the buying patterns of the pros are certainly different. All the hardware has pretty much been bought. Most of these guys have already gone ahead and committed to their hardware buys earlier on last year, probably in the fall. At the same time, most of these pros have already bought their first round of clothing for the 2016 season for their clubs. So again, there's not as much going on there. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not business going on. There's clothing for the fall. There's fall lines being talked about. There are some clubs that haven't bought for their spring lines yet. There's also things like trophies and things for pro-ams and things like that that are purchased. There are obviously purchases made for things that have worn out at a facility. It could be lockers. It could be things that they have used in the pro shop. It can be many things. So there's a lot of buying going on, especially too for smaller things like sunglasses and things like that. But it's not the same as it would have been 20 years ago or 25 years ago, where corporations came in, big golf companies came in and made big, huge pitches to a lot of the pros that would show up. It's not the same now. But it's still a big show, as you indicated, 10 miles of aisles of walking, 1,000 exhibitors. So they still think there's reason to be there. But I think what you'll find in the end, that because of the way we are and the way we do things, a lot of this stuff has already been done through the internet and everything else, that you don't have to, if you're a pro, you don't have to touch and feel everything anymore.
Well, I think it always used to be, probably when I started covering the show, when you started covering the show, it was 90% business, 10% social. Now it's probably closer to 50% social, 50% business. Well, I wish Bruce Zabriskie, who will have a booth down at the merchandise show, he bought a company that sells very elaborate scoreboards for your golf course. So if you go into the show and you see the booth and you see Bruce Zabriskie, stop by and say hello. And we're on our way to Orlando, and we're going to have a full report for you next week on what transpired in Orlando at the PGA Merchandise Show.
You've been listening to The Grill Room, heard on TuneIn and the Armed Forces Radio Network, powered by GolfWeek.com. By the way, The Grill Room is also available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, and, of course, on our website, thegrillroom.com. If you have a minute, please let us know how you like our new 2016 revamp show format. We'd love to hear your feedback. You can send us an email at menu@thegrillroom.com.
A big thank you to our partners, especially the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America. They do a magnificent job, 52 weeks a year. Also to GolfWeek.com. So for Janice Self, Alex Miceli, and myself, Bob Bupka, thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and like us on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show. Have a good week. We'll see you right back here next week for another edition of The Grill Room.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.